We'll drop a few buckets of nails on their road.
Harris and the weapons crews had already discussed the fusing and arming options. They hadn't nearly the number of mines she really needed, but the more of the enemy, the greater the chance of a hit. She presumed the enemy would see them drop the clusters, and that would provoke some kind of maneuver.
And immediate course change, getting us the vector for jumps 2, 3, and 5.
The trailing pair of enemy ships, cruiser and killer escort, worried her. Why were they hanging back? If the rest of the Benignity formation reacted normally, flaring away from the mines, how would that final pair react? Too much to hope they were back there because they were scan blind or something, and would just sweep on majestically into the mine cluster. That thought, however unlikely, brought a grin to her face. She had not anticipated how happy she would be, back on the bridge of an RSS cruiser. It was ridiculous under the circumstances. She had come back only to find herself in a worse tactical mess than any she'd experienced. She had less chance of surviving, let alone winning, this engagement, than she had had with the Board of Inquiry. But that didn't sober her. This was where she belonged, and she felt fully alive, fully awake, for the first time since she'd left. Not that she regretted the experience of the past years, but this was home. And vigilance answered her joy with its own. Every hour she could sense the lift in crew morale. They believed in her. They accepted her. From their reactions alone, she learned things about Garavay that erased the last doubts she'd had. A man might be a traitor to the Familius, and a good leader for his own people, but Garavay had been a user, someone who abused power. If they'd had time to prepare, even 10 or 15 days, she'd have had a reasonable chance, she was sure. Now, she didn't even bother to calculate it. Either luck would be with them, or it wouldn't. She intended to give luck all the help she could. While she wouldn't mind dying in action, it wasn't fair to the people of Xavier. Space combat had a leisurely, surreal phase in which nothing seemed to happen. Weapons had been launched, to find targets or not, minutes to hours hence. And the enemy's weapons were on their way, with Scan trying desperately to find and track them before maneuvering. No one used line-of-sight weapons at this distance, despite their light-speed advantage. What the best scans saw was far behind the enemy's location.
They're starring, avoiding our mines.
That was the usual Benignity move. She'd expected it.
Jump 2.
Harris had laid out a series of micro-jumps, options ready to take depending on the enemy's reaction to the mines. This had been the most likely, the starburst dispersal. If she had kept on course, she'd have gone down the throat of the bell they made. Easy meat.
Targeting.
On target.
Engage.
Instead, the course change and micro jump popped them out in position to fire their forward LOS weapons at the flank of the massive assault carrier they'd chosen as it clawed its way into a shallow curve away from its former course. 4 light seconds away, an easy solution for the computers.
Turn that down.
Harris had never quite believed the theory that said humans needed to hear the fights they got into. Ground combat had been so noisy it drove men insane. So why had psychologists insisted on programming fake noises for combat in space?
Keep it below 10.
It couldn't be turned off completely, but it didn't have to rupture eardrums.
Sir.
Jump 6, then 8.
On their new vector, a micro jump put them safely away from the probable response of the Benignity's cruisers. If she guessed right. Another immediate micro-jump following that brought them out at an angle to another part of the starburst. Another quick targeting solution, another burst with LOS, then back into jump space. This time long enough to open a 20-minute gap, while Kutsudis and the other scan techs reran the scans of the targeting runs. The first run confirmed the starburst and the mass classes of the vessels involved. 7 of them, 3 heavy cruisers carrying half again Vigilance's weaponry, 2 assault carriers massing 3 times the cruisers, and 2 killer escorts. 1 cruiser and 1 killer escort lagging well behind. The second run scans confirmed a hit on the assault carrier, partly buffered by its screens. Harris scowled at the scan data.
They do have good screen technology.
They had hit with both of the cruiser's forward LOS, but one ablated against the screens. The second had penetrated, but hadn't breached the ship. The screens appeared to be weakened, perhaps down, and the infrared showed substantial heat, but no atmosphere. The enemy starburst had modified after the attack, with one side of the starburst rolling over, but slowly, with those massive ships, to regroup along the axis of the original attack. Also quite visible on the second scan was the trace of weapons that had narrowly missed Vigilance when she jumped after the attack.
Damn good shooting from one of their cruisers. Their command cruiser, probably. We weren't on scan a total of 8 seconds, and they nearly got us. It would have been glancing, and the shields would have held, but whoever it is over there is sharp.
How long did it take us to get our shots off?
6 seconds.
Long. On her old ship, they had drilled until they could pop out of a micro jump and fire within 4. No wonder they were almost fried.
We'll do better.
She couldn't move her old crew into every critical position. She hadn't enough of them, and besides, she needed to get this crew working. In a long fight, and she had to hope this would be a long fight, shift after shift would have to fight with peak efficiency. From 20 light minutes away, she could not follow the Paradox's attack in real time, even though Kutsudas bought her a little advantage with his boosted scans. Tinsy, having the advantage of the post-scans of her own attack, had chosen to have another run at the possibly wounded assault carrier. But he took 10 seconds to come out of jump space, locate his target, and shoot. The assault cruiser's shields failed, but he himself was under attack, and he scorched the Benignity ship without breaching it. He jumped just in time, and Harris wondered if he would follow up his attack or simply micro-jump his way to a safe jump point. She had not been sure he would attack at all. He had reported having 2 serious fights aboard after taking command. Although he had seemed slow, even stupid, when she first talked to him, clearly he had plenty of command ability. His ship not only obeyed orders, but had survived a live engagement. In any case, it was time for Vigilance to re-enter the fray. Another pair of micro-jumps brought them in behind the laggards. This time, Harris chose ballistic weapons, half of them heat-targeting, and the other half fitted with the kill-me-target-you guidance systems that converted scrambling countermeasures into secondary guidance. Vigilance launched all its weapons within 6 seconds and was safely back into micro-jump without being touched.
There's Paradox.
The patrol ship had come across the bottom of the CH formation, this time firing within 3 seconds of their jump exit. CH response didn't come close.
Of course, they'll start micro-jumping soon. They're going to be highly peeved with us.
Harris glanced at the clocks.
Take us over to Blue Eyes now.
Blue Eyes was the second largest gas giant in the system, with its own set of rings and satellites to hide in. It was a considerable distance away, but if she could lure them into pursuing her over there, all the better for Xavier. The jump lasted just long enough for Kutsudas to switch the beacon ID. The ship that went into jump at point A was not apparently the same one that emerged from jump at B. Redlining the in-system drive to get a tight swing around the gas giant, and then out on a new vector, a longish run on in-system drive to let the enemy get a good look at them while their own scans scooped data. The CH ships had regrouped, snugging in again and boosting toward Xavier itself, all but the laggards, which had vanished, leaving behind roiled traces that indicated either badly tuned microjumps or explosions.
A lot of infrared. Lots and lots of infrared. An interesting spectra. Not quite what I'd expect if they'd blew, but definitely not normal jump insertion.
The scans looked messier, cluttered with the probable courses of ballistic weapons that had not hit their targets and the extended lines of LOS weapons. As dangerous as enemy fire in an extended battle were the hundreds of armed missiles heading off in all directions. Long micro-jumps even offered the possibility for inept commanders to shoot themselves down with their own LOS beams.
If they've got a new way of foxing our scans, that might explain why they were hanging back.
Janice watched the main clump continue steadily toward Xavier.
Damn it, you'd think they'd have the guts to chase us.
Too smart. They know we're outgunned. Well, no one said this would be easy. Is that another one lagging?
They've slowed. Gives them more maneuverability.
And more options for micro-jumps. Wait. I see only 4 now.
Their killer ship is missing. No, there it is. Sneaking over to... Oh, shit.
Over to the yacht's hiding place. And it would be coming in on their blind side. Its commander probably didn't know the yacht was there, Harris thought. He hoped to conceal his ship in the rings, to catch them on the flank. But instead of ambushing a fox, he was going to scare a rabbit out of the brush. It was already too late to help. Their scan data's lag meant that whatever was going to happen had. Harris said nothing, waiting for the disaster she expected. When the flare came, it wasn't the yacht.
They laid their own mines.
Pharaoh thought of that.
Kill!
That size flare had to be a kill, and the Spectra matched the reference patterns.
Detonated their onboard stuff. I hope the yacht wasn't too close.
Harris felt a little jolt of satisfaction. She had picked the right junior officer to captain the yacht after all. And whatever effect Lady Cecilia had had on him, he'd managed to kill a bigger, more powerful ship. And the enemy's advantage was eroding. From 7 ships, any of them a match for hers, the Benignity commander was down to 4, one with severely damaged shields, assuming the 2 that had vanished weren't hiding cleverly somewhere. Instinct told her no, that they had either been destroyed or had fled, damaged, into FTL. Not smart. Ships that entered FTL with major damage rarely emerged on the other end. If only she'd been able to lay a proper array of mines around Xavier, she'd have a chance to win outright, with all her own ships intact. Still, they'd done better than she'd expected. In the long hours that remained of the inward traverse, they would have several more chances for the quick, darting attacks that gave her ships the best chance, especially since the CH formation no longer had killer ships to duel with them.
We can't let them alone long enough to repair their shields. I want to change shifts now. I know it's 2 standard hours early, but we need the freshest reflexes we have.
She herself had been up and running too long. She didn't even want to think how long it had been since she assembled the small group that had taken over the vigilance.
I'm taking 4 hours myself. You have your orders, Svatek.
When Harris woke, she saw that the CH group had not wavered from its course. They had drawn back into a tight cluster where shields could reinforce each other, with the damaged assault carrier in the middle, and they could shrug off the fast, brief attacks. Paradox had missed 60% of its shots. Harris sent them a tight beam, ordering them to jump a safe distance away and rest for 6 hours. Pharaoh, on the yacht, offered to come help harry the enemy. Harris decided against it. The yacht's weak shields and relatively light armament meant that it could be little help, but easy prey. If it bumped into any of the stray weapons now cluttering the scene, it would have no chance. Instead, the yacht could flit in micro-jumps, reappearing with different beacon IDs, distracting the CH crews from the real attacks, tempting them to waste shots on it. That was dangerous enough. And in the end, the yacht should run as fast as possible to spill its scan records at the nearest fleet base. She warned Pharaoh that one or more nearby jump points might be mined. For the next 6 hours, Harris sent vigilance in and out of FTL, harrying the CH group. With every run, the mess on scan worsened, until it was almost impossible to find a safe place to shoot from. Although her ship escaped damage, it inflicted nothing beyond temporary ablation of the enemy shields, and the CH group did not maneuver at all in response to the attacks. They expected to bowl their way through to their goal. If she'd had their mass and firepower, she'd have done the same.
Return no more fire. They're trying to make us waste it.
We have plenty.
If that traitor told the truth, and there are no more familiar ships to fight, we cannot count on that.
Admiral Straussi admired the discipline of the enemy ships. They had wasted little of their capacity. Even the misses were close enough to give everyone a scare. His crews were exhausted. They were not used to such sustained fighting, and the loss of Zamfir and Cusp had shaken them. And then Snare. He still had no idea what had happened to Snare. It could have been as simple as miscalculating the location of ring components, but if that tiny little ship, yacht, the traitor had called it, was capable of blowing a killer escort, then he had to be wary of it. At least he had not been fooled by the beacon changes after the first few times.
If we don't return fire, they'll just come closer and closer until our shields fail.
To come that close, they'll have to be in real space longer. Then we return fire. They are gnats. Mosquitoes. Annoying, but not really dangerous. When they get greedy and sit still, we swat them.
They were dangerous, and he knew it. But even so, he had no other options. Xavier was his target. He could not waste time chasing a Serrano around the system. He did hope that Serrano hadn't managed to find a way to lay mine drifts out here somewhere.
Or around that miserable planet.
So, do we close in now?
They'd made 2 attack runs with no return fire. Harris munched on a sandwich.
No. He's just conserving his weapons. He's not helpless. He must wonder if we've got more ships coming.
If only Despite...
Harris shook her head at him. They had all debated the chance that Despite's crew might mutiny and come back to help them, assuming that most of the crew, like the crews of Vigilance and Paradox, were loyal. But the hours had passed with no sign of return.
If our packet made it out, someone should be getting a poke about now. That still means hours, more likely days, before other ships could arrive.
If some traitor at the other end didn't suppress it. If a battle group or wave was ready to set off when the message arrived. She wondered again about her aunt. How much had she guessed of the enemy's intention? Was there a worse problem somewhere else that she committed so little resources to this likely target?
At best, we have to hold them off the planet for...
Hours and hours. Forever, basically. We don't know how far behind this group their main invasion force is.
Far behind, she hoped. Benignity policy usually required an attack force to report back before the supporting force arrived. They continued their dodging attacks, run after run, as much to keep the Benignity crews tired as anything else. And the enemy closed on Xavier, breaking in perfect formation. Xavier Station died in a burst of coherent radiation that fried its way through the station and on into the planet's atmosphere, where its degrading beam wreaked havoc on communications and finally on the surface. The station reactors, as they blew, sent pulses of EMC that destroyed surface-based computers.
I wonder how many were left aboard.
Supposedly, they were all evacuated. I hope the General Secretary got people into shelters downside. With any luck, everyone was off the station.
But she knew a few wouldn't have been. The last shuttles had been overloaded, according to Cecilia, with near riots as they left. But planets are large, and spaceships, however large, are small in comparison. It takes time to scorch a planet so that it can be garrisoned shortly afterward. Easier to flame it, but that makes it hard to install the kind of military base the Benignity was planning. Harris had counted on that, on their need to be careful, precise. Now that it was 5-3, the injured assault carrier's weapons weren't functioning, and the weapons it carried for installation would be stowed away, she might just pull it off. The CH ships took up equatorial orbits, spacing themselves around the planet where their scans and weapons could reach the entire surface, the two cruisers higher and the two assault carriers slightly lower. The assault carriers would soon crack their bays and start disgorging drop shuttles and equipment drones. The damaged one wouldn't even wait for the cruisers to turn the attacks.
Damn! I thought we made it clear where to lay the mines. Those assault carriers are low enough, or almost...
Maybe they went for lowest orbits to catch the drop shuttles on the way down. They don't have diddly for shielding.
Yeah, and they don't have to stick to equatorial transits either. Idiots. If they'd done what we told them...
Captain, there's a big ship behind us.
Behind us?
It's that ore carrier.
Weapons?
Nothing.
It seemed to wallow, even on the screens. A huge hull massing considerably more than anything but the assault carriers. Neither weapons nor screens colored its display.
What do they think they're doing? Helping us?
With no weapons? Ha! At least, if it has no weapons, it can't shoot us.
What made the miners think they could fight with a bare hull, however large? And why now?
Harris forced herself to ignore that enigma and went back to the battle at hand. So far, they'd been lucky. The destruction of the killer escorts had removed the only enemy hulls that could match them in maneuvering at speed. Now, if they were to save Xavier's population, she had to bring her ships out of hiding and engage in a slugfest. Not her kind of fight, but she saw no alternative. At least the CH ships were also limited in their options, committed to orbital positions and unable to combine their fire as effectively. With near-perfect precision, Vigilance and Paradox exited from microjumps in the positions Harris had selected, within a tenth of a light second of their targets. Harris had chosen to take on one of the CH cruisers. Paradox would hit the weakened assault carrier, and Pharaoh on the yacht would seem to be a new menace to the other cruiser. The computers fired before even Kutsudas could have reacted. By the time the scans had steadied, they picked up the results of that salvo, even as Harris emptied another into the nearest cruiser and sent a raft of ballistics at the ships to either side of her. Her target had suffered shield damage, and the hull flared, hot but unbroken.
Ouch.
Their own shields shimmered, and the status lights went yellow. The cruiser had returned fire before their second salvo, and now poured a stream of LOS and ballistics both at them. Shield saturation rose steadily, then leveled off. Their scans wavered, unable to see through the blinding fury outside, even at close range.
Pharaoh fired something. I can't see if it hit, and he's jumped again.
Both flanks engaged.
One of those was the undamaged assault carrier, now clawing its way up from its lower orbit. Then one entire board turned red.
Port side aft. The missile...
A blow she felt from head to heel as Vigilance bucked to the explosion of her own missile battery. Before Harris could say anything, Helm rolled Vigilance on its long axis so that unbreached shields faced the cruiser that had raked them.
Good job, Major.
Medical, engineering, damage control, environmental, all answered the alarms. Her concern was that damaged flank, now turned to the less armed but still dangerous assault carrier. She kept her eye on weapons, but her crew needed no prodding. They were throwing everything they had at the enemy. The weapons boards shifted color constantly as discharge and recharge alternated in the LOS circuits, as crews below reloaded missile tubes.
Captain, portside batteries breached. Casualties...
Compartment reports.
Milcini was doing much better than she'd expected. The reports matched the displays Harris could see. Several LOS beams at once had degraded their shields and then fried a hole in the hull and the warheads of missiles in storage. These had blown, ripping a larger hole in their flank. Lost with it were a third of the portside maneuvering pods. Lost, too, were the crews of the batteries on either side of the storage compartment, and a still uncertain number of casualties in neighboring compartments. Only Kutsudis's boosted scan still penetrated their own screens and the maelstrom of debris and weaponry beyond them. He hunched over his board, transferring position and ship ID data to weapons, shunting other data to other stations. He stiffened.
We got the Dillon!
Its trace on his screen fuzzed, then split into many smaller ones. Its icon changed from red to gray.
There's the reactor, that hot bit there.
That hot bit, which would, on its present trajectory, fry in the atmosphere on its way down, shedding a spray of active isotopes. Couldn't be helped, and the nukes already launched were worse. Their scans blurred completely as the last burst of Dillon's attack hit their shields.
Shields held.
The scans cleared slowly. Harris ignored them for the moment to look at the inboard status screens. The breach hadn't progressed and hadn't compromised major systems. The lock-offs held and would, if not damaged, further. Slowly, from the space-suited medics and repair crew working their way aft, Harris learned more. The hole in the hull couldn't be repaired now, perhaps not at all, but somehow some of the stored missiles had not exploded. The force of the explosion had gone outward through the hull breach, and the heat flash in the compartment hadn't been enough to overcome the fail-safes on those racked inboard. Some had broken loose and were probably, the petty chief said, out there ready to blow up if the CH would only be so kind as to hit them. 38 were still racked, and, if they could get airlocks rigged to the nearest cross corridor, could be transferred to the surviving batteries. Engineering reported that the ablated shields could be reset when they'd rerouted some damaged cable. 15 to 20 minutes. If they had 15 minutes. Harris forbore to hurry them. It would take as long as it took. She checked again with sickbay. Most of the casualties were dead, as expected. But there were 18 listed as serious, and another 5 as moderate, out of duty for at least 24 hours. 3 to 2 now. If her two ships had been undamaged, if they had had plenty of weapons left, but Paradox, though undamaged, had run out of missiles, and its LOS beams were discharged. In another 5 or 6 hours, hours they didn't have, it could support her with beam weapons. Now, though, an undamaged cruiser, a third again the size of hers, stalked her. Encumbered as it was with a crippled assault carrier it must shelter, how would it choose to fight? The other assault carrier still had more firepower than Vigilance, but it was far less maneuverable.
There's something jumping in. Something big. Lots... Damn!
Harris couldn't help whatever it was, and snapping at Esteban wouldn't get her the data any faster.
And skip jumping. They know exactly what they're coming into.
Which meant the Benignity, probably. Harris had small hope that her own message, sent on the station's equipment, had gotten through.
It's despite!
Hearn changed her mind? Hearn led the Benignity fleet in herself?
Kutsudis leaned over his screen as if that would help.
The distant ones. It'll be hours before I can get an ID unless they skip their way into closer range.
And here's the other cruiser, Paganini, their admiral's flagship.
Well, I suppose it's time to face that music.
Harris grinned at the bridge crew, as some shook their heads at the pun.
That patrol craft has quit attacking.
That patrol craft had almost hauled an assault carrier by itself, and that should not have been possible. If only the damn things weren't so maneuverable.
What about the others?
There's a big cargo vessel moving very slowly in from the gas giant. It could even be an ore hauler with no communications capacity, possibly unmanned. It's no threat. The cruiser's damaged. Dylan and Augustus have it bracketed, and it won't last long.
Sir, it's Dylan! It's gone!
Nonsense!
It is! And that damnable Serrano is still there.
Straussi's blood seemed to take fire. The bitch had ruined his attack and his career. The Benignity would have not only his neck, but his family's fortune.
Enough! First we kill that patrol, then her! All ships!
The assault carriers could keep her busy while he blew the patrol ship, and then... then all three of them would blast that stupid, stubborn woman right out of this world. Jig Esme Suiza had survived the battle for control of Despite, and after Major Dovir finally died, she ranked all the others. The small band of ensigns and junior lieutenants who had been the nucleus of the Loyalists. Now she faced the grizzled, balding senior NCO, Master Chief Vesek, who had just called her captain and asked for orders. She managed not to say, "Me?"
Dovir's dead then?
Yes, Captain Suiza.
There had been a time when she dreamed of hearing that, of coming aboard her first command, of being congratulated. Now she stared back, her mind foggy with fatigue. Vesek stood in front of her, a stocky man her father's age, with her father's air of impatience with youthful indecision. She was captain. She had to know what to do. She wanted to burst into tears. She didn't.
Position?
3 minutes from FTL exit through Jump Point Balrog.
Balrog has a fleet relay.
Yes, sir. Also, there's usually a man station.
A wave of relief washed over her. Help. Someone senior who would tell her what to do.
We'll drop a packet.
If the captain permits.
Yes?
It might be wise to take precautions. Sometimes when the Benignity attacks, they've mined nearby jump points.
And what would Captain... what's a good way of being careful?
Low relative V insertion. Shields hot as we come out. Wait for scans to recover.
Very well. Then make it so.
Yes, sir.
She saw covert glances from others on the bridge. Pelly, only 6 months junior, who had proved more than once he was better at things than she was. He stared at her, then his lips moved. She read them easily.
Oh.
The captain's formal announcement of command. She moved over to the command position and picked up the command wand Dovir had given her after he was shot. She couldn't sit. The command chair still stank of blood and guts, and she had to lean down to insert it in the slot.
Attention all posts. This is Lieutenant Junior Grade Esme Suiza, assuming command of the patrol craft Despite, upon the deaths of all officers senior in the chain of command.
The computer requested her serial number. She gave it automatically. Then it was over, and she was formally and finally in command. Her vision wavered. Pelly came closer. The challenge she usually saw in his eyes was missing.
Captain, we're not going back, are we?
Back?
Esme hadn't thought that far. It had been Dovir's decision to run for help, to call in fleet. Now it was hers. She shook her head.
We're coming out of jump to make our report, Pelly. What we do next depends on what we find.
Jump exit brought a ripple of light to the blanked scan screens. Gradually, the ripples steadied and became points of light, icons tagged with ID numbers, colored lines defining traffic lanes in the Balrog system. Debris sparkled in a ragged shell around the jump point.
Debris. One thing about it, whoever got blown took most of the mines with them.
Esme felt cold. That could have been their ship, coming out of jump with high V, fleeing trouble.
The fleet picket?
None of the icons showed a fleet ID. She could see that for herself.
We'll hope not.
Launch that packet. Estimate time to a fleet node with live pickup.
3 or 4 days, sir.
Add to that the response time, and it meant that those two ships back at Xavier would be sparkling debris in someone else's scan by the time help arrived. The juniors had discussed that in the hours before someone appeared to offer them a place in the mutiny. She didn't want to go back. She had no combat experience. She knew nothing about commanding a ship this size on a routine voyage, let alone in combat. She could get them all killed without helping Serrano at all. The smart thing to do was go on, take the jump sequences as fast as possible back to the central zones, and find an admiral with a battle group ready to go. She had been a very green ensign, shy, afraid that everyone could see through her shiny insignia and new uniform to the fear. And she had stumbled and dropped her duffel right at the feet of a couple of senior officers waiting to enter the lift.
They get younger every year.
The other had picked up her scattered data cubes.
Ah, your specialty's scan technology? Good. We've got an excellent chief. You'll like him.
She had never forgotten that face. She had gotten in a disgraceful, so her commander said, fight with another Jig when Harris Serrano left the fleet, defending her. And she had seen that face again, trying to talk Hearn into turning around. Dovir had played the tape for any doubters among the mutineers.
We're going back.
Vesek looked startled, but didn't argue.
I want the fastest possible transit back into Xavier. They can't wait.
Esme still didn't want to go back, any more than she'd wanted to be part of a mutiny, to have Dovir's blood and organs splashed into her face, to have this command. But it was her ship now, and she would do what she had to.
Prepare for battle.
No one argued. No one bothered her at all. She still had no idea how she was going to fight, but she would.
They're after Paradox.
And she's out of darts. Damn it, Tinsy, get her out of there!
But the patrol ship was too close to the planet to risk jump, and at these distances, its maneuvering advantage disappeared. Scan showed acceleration, but the need to keep the screens on full combat strength held it well below maximum. Then the rising curve took Paradox out of their line of sight behind the planet. She would have to go closer to Paganini before she could pull away, if she could. Vigilance couldn't help. Their flank screens were still down, though the engineers kept saying just another minute or two, and the damaged assault carrier lobbed enough missiles at them to keep them busy, shifting so that those which broke through met solid shields.
It's not Hearn, on despite. Someone named Suiza?
By the crew's list, that's a Jig. What did they have, a mutiny?
Harris had other things to worry about than who had killed whom on despite.
Must have. But why are they here now?
Their scan icon had the bright blue edge, meaning a relative V in major fractions of light speed.
They're coming almighty fast. Came out fast and haven't slowed. Their scans will be useless.
They're running on maps. Can they slow that thing by Xavier, or are they going to blow by?
Wait, there it is. They're breaking. By time lag, that's 2 hours back.
The scan fragmented as the incoming ship's relativistic motion skewed all the data. When it steadied again, despite was only hours away.
Regular Space Service Patrol craft despite. Esme Suiza commanding, in advance of a Familius Regnant force.
She probably hoped that would scare off the Benignity ships. Harris knew it wouldn't. They had lost too much. They would fight to the death now, having no alternative. The newcomer lit up the scan screens like fireworks.
At least her weapons are hot.
No Jig can fight an admiral of the Compassionate Hand on his own flagship. He's no fool.
Despite had arrived with too much relative velocity, and now she swung wide of Xavier, still trying to break.
Fire now! Damn it. Micro-jump into position. Do something!
But Despite rolled on. A moment later, just as Paradox came back into line of sight, clawing its way up, its shields flared.
Damn. He's going to lose them.
Now they could see the enemy cruiser, in the textbook position for killing smaller, faster ships. Its greater firepower had full weight now. The shields flared again and again, each time a little more. Harris wanted to close her eyes, but forced herself to watch. Toward the end, Tinsy must have realized his position was hopeless. Suddenly, Paradox accelerated full power.
He cut the shields. He's gonna ram!
He's too far away!
Lutsutis was right. The Benignity commander hadn't let Paradox get close enough for that. Instead, a final round of fire poured into the unprotected ship, and Paradox blew. The enemy cruiser's shield sparkled briefly as it fended off debris.
1,823. No one is going to survive that blast.
Kutsudis looked up a moment and rubbed his eyes.
Damn it. That idiot on despite had done something. Anything to distract that admiral.
Later.
If they had a later. Even with despite, the odds were no better than before. And she could not count on an inexperienced captain. 3-1, she faced And here came the cruiser and the other assault carrier.
Shields are up.
Good.
It didn't make that much difference. They'd lost over half their remaining missiles. They were outgunned and too close to the planet to go into jump. But shields would help, at least delay the end. The end came first to one of the assault carriers, the one with damaged shields. Harris, concentrating on the enemy cruiser, had no idea why the carrier suddenly burst and spewed its load of vehicles and personnel and heavy equipment into space. No one did, until afterward, when the sole survivor of the shuttle that had used its phase cannon told them. At the time, she assumed that Despite had gotten off a lucky shot. The captain of the other assault carrier reacted by taking his ship down, trying to cut beneath Vigilance and perhaps also release his load. He paid for this mistake when he hit a drift of mines. The carrier, now with a sizable hole in the hull, immediately launched its drop shuttles, only to have most of them blown away by other orbiting mines on the way down. Harris had no leisure to enjoy his plight, for the remaining cruiser attacked with all its force. Vigilance faced the same problems as Paradox. Its shields bled power from the drive and kept them from using their superior speed and maneuverability. Through the maelstrom that combat made of their scans, no one could find Despite.
If she'd only come up on his rear, she couldn't blow him up, but she could distract him, take a little of the heat off us.
Then the Paganini blew, a burst of debris and radiation that completely blanked their screens.
Ouch.
Harris didn't quite believe it. She would have pinched herself if a dozen people hadn't been staring at her, their faces full of her own disbelief. When the scans cleared at last, Despite hung steady, a light second away, with a very nervous-looking young Jig on a tight-beam link to Vigilance. The extra signals Kutsudis had noted when Despite first blew into the system belonged to regular space service ships. Cruisers, patrols, escorts, battle platforms, and the supply and service ships needed to keep them going. Tankers, mine layers, mine sweepers, troop carriers.
The question is whether they're with us or against us. Considering the last multiple arrivals...
More likely they're answering your signals.
Kutsudis fiddled with his scans.
Well, Captain, it's family, whether that pleases you or not. That's the Harrier, Admiral Vita Serrano's flagship. Signaling Admiral aboard, too.
At us or in general?
In general. They won't have us on scan yet.
Even after so long, even with the exhaustion dragging the flesh below his eyes into dark pockets... He still had that smug attitude about his scans, and deserved to.
Fine. Then continue our present broadcast, and I want this shift bridge crew to go down for 6 hours.
We're as rested as the others.
Which is not rested at all. I want my main shift crew rested first, then the others in rotation. Tabs for all. Oh, and add a time tag to that broadcast, with the end of battle all secured code. That way they won't have conniptions if they come roaring in and find out I'm asleep.
They would anyway, but she would tell the next shift to wake her once she'd gotten this gaggle off to their racks. The second shift, called back, looked no worse than the ones they relieved. Harris waited to be sure the young major understood what to do, then headed for her quarters. She had to be awake and alert for the coming confrontation with her aunt. She remembered to put in a call to Despite, telling them to get some rest, then fell into dreamless sleep.
What?
She woke, feeling entirely too rested, and a glance at the chronometer told her why. 9 solid hours? She would rip the hide off someone just as soon as she quit yawning. A shower woke her the rest of the way, and she came back into the compartment wishing she had a clean uniform. The one she had worn for days looked almost as bad as it smelled. In that brief interval, someone had made her bunk. Someone had also laid out a clean uniform. She could see where other insignia had been hastily removed and the right number of rings sewn on. She tried it on. Although it was a bit loose and slightly longer than she preferred, it would do. Harris headed for the bridge. The familiar uniform felt so comforting. It was going to be hard to take strips off a crew that took such good care of her. The bridge officer, Milcini again, looked guilty when she glared at him.
He said to let you sleep. I thought it was your order, sir.
He who?
Major Svatek stood up, bleary-eyed and haggard.
Me, sir. I know what you said,
but we haven't had any urgent messages, and the incoming group hasn't changed course. It's continuing to decelerate. The senior surgeon recommended that all shifts take a full 8 hours.
You haven't. Does this mean second shift's just going off?
No, sir. If the captain recalls, second and third had been on a 4-hour rollover standby, while first was on that last long watch. First went out, and after 4 hours, I sent second down and brought in third. First had 8 hours off, six in full assisted sleep. Second's been down for 5 hours, and third's just gone down. In another 3 hours, second will have had its 8 hours, and by the time they're off...
Makes sense.
It wasn't what she'd ordered, but it was what she would have ordered if she'd been thinking clearly.
Good decision. Now, why are you still on the bridge?
Because, Captain, I'm the one whose neck you could wring if you wanted to.
Harris had to admire that.
Better decision. Now take yourself off to bed and don't come back until you've slept it out. At least 8 hours. And this time, obey orders.
Yes, sir. If I could make a suggestion, Captain?
Of course.
The galleys are back in operation. I'm sure they'd be glad to send something up.
What are you, my medical advisor? No, never mind, you're right. I presume first shift 8 on the way up?
Yes, sir.
Good. Go on now, don't hover.
Svatek smiled and left the bridge. Harris looked around, checking each position. Everything seemed normal as it could be with a hole in the side of the ship and a civilian very illegally in command of it. She checked the status of the casualties in sickbay, the progress of repairs, and realized that Svatek was right. She needed food.
I'm going to my office, Mr. Milsini. You have the bridge.
In her office, she looked around a moment. She had hardly seen it since it had been Garavay's, since she had killed him. Nothing showed on its surfaces. No stains on the rug, no scrapes on the furniture. She sent for a meal, anything hot, and began working through the message stack. Despite reported some garbled transmissions from the planet's surface, they had also carried out the orbital damage survey. The Benignity commander, intending to put down his own troops, had used less toxic weapons than he might have. Although the two small cities had been flattened and wildfires burned across the grasslands and forests near them, the rest of the planet wasn't damaged. It would remain livable. Harris thought of the pretty little city she had ridden through, with its white stone buildings now blasted to rubble, its colorful gardens blackened. It could have been worse, but that didn't make it good. She ate the food when it came without noticing what it was. One group of miners wanted to know if it was safe to go back to their domed colony. Another claimed salvage rights on the destroyed killer escort and asked permission to start cutting it up. She suspected it had already started doing so. Those in the ore carrier, without any explanation of what they'd been doing, announced that they were going back. Harris called the bridge and asked for tight beams to both Despite and Sweet Delight. The young captain of Despite wanted to explain the mutiny, but Harris cut her off.
That's for a board of inquiry. Right now, I need to know what you've picked up from the planet.
We have no estimate of the number of survivors. We picked up two transmitters, but one may be an automatic distress beacon. It's repeating the same message over and over. The other seems to be trying to contact the first, not us.
Oh, they probably don't know who won up here, and they're trying to collect their forces on the ground. A good sign, though it may be tricky for our people to land if they're going to be mistaken for hostiles.
A light blinked on her console.
Excuse me, Captain.
The youngster started, as if she were surprised at the formality.
I'll get back to you.
This time, it was Jig Farrow on Sweet Delight. She remembered that she'd told him to keep his distance until called.
Come on back. We need to get those civilians off the yacht, or you off the yacht, I'm not sure which.
Yes, sir.
He seemed much older than the other Jig, but then he hadn't been through a mutiny, and the command of a yacht was well within his ability. Harris still had to find out how Sweeza had ended up in command, and how she'd destroyed a Benignity heavy cruiser.
A couple of them aren't aboard.
Aren't aboard? What do you mean?
Well, Lady Cecilia said it was a good idea. Brun's acting as our liaison with the miners.
Oh. Well, make sure someone brings her in.
Another blinking light. This one must be the Admiral's call.
Be sure we know your ETA.
Captain, tight beam from the Admiral.
Coming.
Harris left for the bridge, very glad of the clean uniform. She nodded to Milsini and sat in the command chair. She hadn't actually sat down in it before. She'd been too busy running a warship in combat, when she always thought better on her feet. Now she put on its headset and enabled the screen. There on the display was her Aunt Vida, Admiral Stars winking on her shoulders.
Captain Serrano.
Sir?
Harris was aware of a grim satisfaction in the steadiness of her voice. Defiance tempted her, the urge to say something reckless. She fought it down, along with the questions she could ask only in private.
Situation?
That was regulation enough. It might mean any of several things, including the straightforward need for information.
No present hostilities. Xavier's system was attacked by a Benignity force, which destroyed its orbital station and did major damage to both population centers. Damage estimates for the planet and its population are incomplete. We have not established communication with survivors. There were at least two functional transmitters. The population did have some warning, and the local government tried to evacuate to wilderness areas.
And Commander Garavay?
Is dead. May I have the Admiral's permission to send an encrypted sidebar packet?
Go ahead.
Harris had prepared an account of her actions and the background to them. Now she handed this to a communications tech.
Status of regular space service vessels?
Paradox was lost in combat, no survivors known. Vigilance has structural damage to an aft missile bay from a blowout. Engineering advises that it would not be safe to attempt FTL at this time. Despite is jump capable and essentially undamaged, but extremely short crewed.
How dirty is the system?
In other words, how many loose missiles with proximity fuses were wandering around on the last heading they'd followed?
Still dirty. And we laid orbital mines around Xavier, non-standard ones improvised with local explosives. None of those are fissionables, but they're potent.
Very well. Hold your position until further orders. We'll send the sweepers ahead. We're laying additional mines in the jump exit corridors and closing this system to commercial traffic until the new station is up and operating. Good job, Captain Serrano. Please inform your command of the Admiralty's satisfaction.
Thank you, sir.
Harris could not believe it was ending like this. Of course, there were reasons an admiral wouldn't get into all the issues, even on a tight beam transmission, but she had expected something, some demand for explanation. Something.
Well, Admiral Serrano thinks we did a good job. I think we already knew that. Now let's get things in order for the Admiral's inspection, because if I know anything about Admirals, she'll be aboard as soon as Harrier's in orbit.
Oh.
Brunn woke slowly in fits and starts. It was dark. It was cold. She couldn't quite remember where she was, and when she reached for covers, she discovered that she was quite naked. The movement itself set up competing fluctuations in her head and belly. She came all the way awake in a sudden terror that slicked her cold skin with sweat. After uncountable moments of heart-pounding fear, Brunn wrestled her panic to a dead stop. She wasn't dead. She hung on to that with mental fingernails. In 20 minutes, maybe, or 2 hours, or a day, she might be dead. But not now. So now was the time she had to figure something out.
Oh, well, you wanted adventure. Oh, you could be sitting in a nice, warm, safe room surrounded by every luxury, but no.
But no time to think that either. Only time for the realities, the most basic of basics, air. She was breathing, so she must have air of a sort. She didn't even feel breathless, though her heart was pounding. That was probably fear. She wouldn't let herself call it panic. She felt around her, finding nothing at first in the darkness. Nearly zero gravity, she thought. And air, and not freezing, or she'd be dead. Her stomach wanted to crawl out her mouth, but she told it no. She'd already gagged once. Her belly was empty. Dry heaves would only waste energy. She hoped that she hadn't already compromised the ventilation system with vomit. Still, even if she had air now, she might not always. She had to get somewhere and find out where she was and how long she had. She tried to remember what she'd been taught about zero-gravity maneuvers. If you were stuck in the middle of a compartment, someone had said, who? Was her memory going too? You could put yourself into a spin and hope to bump into something. A slow spin, or you'd throw up. And how to spin? She twisted experimentally and then drew up her legs while extending her arms. Something brushed her leg. She grabbed for it, automatically. Her hand found nothing, but nausea grabbed her, proving that she'd tumbled. She flung out arms and legs both to slow the rotation, and felt something brush her left elbow. Maddening. She couldn't tell what it was. Slowly, she tried to reach across with her right hand. Whatever it was slid along her arm. She was moving again. On her shoulder, down her back. It was hard not to grab, but she waited. Something linear, like a rope or length of tubing. Smooth, not rough. Cool. Her head hit a surface, hard.
Oh! Ow!
She saw sparkles in the darkness for a moment, then her vision settled. Cautiously, she moved her hand up, found the surface, knobbly with switches. Some were rocker switches, smooth curves of plastic. Others were little metal toggles. A few were round, flat buttons with incised lettering. She could feel that, but not what the letters were.
A control panel? But for what?
She tried to remember what she'd seen before everything went wrong. The image that came to her was grinning faces, mouths open, singing. A party. It had been a party, loud and happy. The rest of the memory burst over her. The ore hauler, stuffed like an egg carton with the little four-person pods. The miners had their own plans for dealing with Benignity invaders. Pharaoh had been horrified. He knew they couldn't survive a fight with the big ships. She had offered to go talk to them. He'd agreed. Then, against Pharaoh's expectation, though she had never doubted it, Harris Serrano had defeated the Benignity ships, and fleet had arrived. They were safe. The resulting celebration involved mysterious liquids far more potent than the fine wines and liquors her father served, even more potent than the illicit brews at school. The last she remembered was sinking peacefully into a bunk while a group of miners sang the 42nd verse of Down by the Bottom of the Shaft. Or perhaps the 21st verse the second time around. It had a fairly repetitious form, minor variations on the same few innuendos, and she hadn't exactly been paying close attention. Which meant she was probably in one of the personnel pods. Which meant she had seen the control panels before. She didn't want to push any of the flat buttons. They were all critical. One of them, she remembered, was the airlock main control. She had drifted closer to the control panel. Her knee bumped something with an edge. The desks below or the storage shelf above, it didn't really matter. And she felt cautiously around with her foot until she was sure she had the foot hooked under that edge. She felt carefully with both hands until she had the little metal tip of a toggle pinched in either hand. Now she was anchored if she didn't lose her grip. Her feet defined down for the moment. She let the other foot wave slowly until her toes found the same edge and crawled under it. Both feet hooked in. Now she could release one hand and feel around in a more organized way. Out to the right, the switches ended in a smooth, cool surface. That made sense with her memories. Carefully, forcing herself not to rush and break loose, she moved her right hand back, caught hold of the toggle, and slid her left hand across the switches there. Should she push this switch? Any switch? Panic shook her again, as if some great beast had its jaws around her chest. Think. What would happen if she didn't? She'd be here naked in the dark until she died, and she would have no idea when that might be. Was that what she wanted? No. The first switch she pushed produced no detectable change, nor did the second. She hesitated before pushing another. If the electrical system was off, none of the switches would do anything. But if the electrical system was off, the air wouldn't be circulating, and that tiny draft on the small of her back suggested that it was, though perhaps on a standby system. Where had the electrical system controls been? On the left-hand side of the consoles, if she was right side up. Now she could think of that, and how to tell. Below the consoles, a knee-hole space accommodated the person working them. Above was the storage shelf with netting. Her toes wiggled down and found themselves snagged in something tangled. Netting, she hoped. That meant... Her mind struggled. It was surprisingly hard to think upside down in the dark. The lower left console would now be... up here. She felt over it slowly. The main lighting control should be about halfway up. Perhaps this big rocker switch? Light stabbed at her. She squinted. She was indeed upside down. Her stomach lurched, and she fought back the nausea. It wasn't really upside down, not in zero-G, just relatively upside down. That thought didn't help. "Move slowly," Janice had told her repeatedly. Now, as she tried to turn her head and look across the tiny compartment, one foot came unhooked and she lost her grip on the toggle. "Don't panic," Janice always said. "Just drift if you have to." She drifted, held by her right toes clenched on the shelf's retracted netting. Light was definitely better. She could put up a hand to fend off the stool that tumbled slowly before her. Was that what she'd kicked before? And she could see that what she'd first felt was indeed a length of tubing, perhaps 2 or 3 meters of it. She had no idea what it was for. After a long struggle, she finally twisted and coiled herself into an upright position, with her feet under the consoles. With a firm grip on the edge, she rested and tried to think more clearly. She was, as she'd thought, naked. She saw no sign of a spacesuit, but across the compartment were personnel lockers. Perhaps in there she could find something. Meanwhile, with the lights on, she could identify most of the switches. She pushed displays on, and the smooth screens to either side of the consoles lit up. For a moment, they blurred into fuzzy rainbows as tears rose, but she blinked hard. She could cry later if she had to. For now, first things first. Air. She had air more than 100 hours at present usage. She had electrical power keeping the internal temperature high enough for survival. Calories, in that limited sense. Water? She found none listed, but that didn't mean much. She might find juice in one of the lockers. Slowly, carefully, she worked her way around, checking the lockers. 2 plastic flasks with zero-G nipples full of clear liquid. The first she tried gave her a fiery drop of the same stuff drunk at the party. She grimaced and pinched the nipple shut. The other was water, pleasantly cool. The next locker was half full of concentrate bars, sticky taped to the racks. Better and better, food as well as water. Brunn alternated sips of water with bites of concentrate. She still didn't know why she was in a pod in zero-G. Was it someone's idea of a joke? A political move? An attempt to use her as a pawn in play against her father or Harris?
I don't think so.
Brunn felt much better, even without clothes on, now that a bar of concentrate was doing its work in her belly. She looked at the exterior scans again. The miners had explained their reference system. She could locate Xavier, Orison, Blue Eyes, Zadok. Rock blips were supposed to be one color, and ship blips another, which meant, if she was right about it, that there were a lot of ships out there. One of them would be the Sweet Delight, and one would be Vigilance, with Kutsudis on scan. Someone should be able to see the pod, if they bothered to look, with the battle over. And there were lots of little blips going by, some of them marked by the scans as thermally active.
Thermally active rocks? Aren't thermally active rocks found in volcanoes?
She'd never heard of volcanoes on anything smaller than a planet. Ahead, a drift of blips slid across the screen, thickening. She was moving too fast, she realized, relative to those rocks. Pods were tough, but not that tough. It took her a few moments to locate the thruster controls and confirm the full fuel tanks. Then she began maneuvering, using short bursts, as she remembered someone telling her, trying to work away from the thickest clumps of blips. Harris struggled to keep herself under control.
"She's what?"
Pharaoh looked miserable enough, and he wasn't the one who'd done it.
"She volunteered to go talk to the miners aboard the ore hauler to convince them to go back into hiding. I was going to pick her up before our final jump out. When you won, I sent word, and apparently they had this party."
Harris could imagine. An ore hauler full of drunken miners who had just learned that they weren't going to commit suicide by attacking warships with pods. They'd have been crazy to start with, and the party hadn't helped.
"And apparently she passed out, and someone threw up on her. And they cleaned her up and put her in a pod to sleep it off, only someone hit the jettison control by mistake hours later."
And now Brunn was out there in a little personnel pod, unconscious or sicker than sin if she was awake, in space thoroughly contaminated with spent weapons from days of fighting.
"Why didn't they go after her?"
"They said that whoever hit the jettison control was so drunk he didn't realize he'd done it. They only realized the pod was gone when they went to give her some clean clothes.
Great. She's not only unconscious, but naked.
Harris could imagine explaining this to Lord Thornbuckle.
Sorry, sir, but I let your daughter experience war in the company of drunken miners, and they dumped her into a pod, unconscious and naked, and shoved her out into the debris of battle.
No, not a good plan. Something had to be done.
Do they have any kind of location on the pod?
Pharaoh looked miserable, as well he might.
No, sir. I've had our scan techs on it since I heard, of course, but there's so much...
Captain, you won't believe this.
Harris looked up at Kutsudis across the bridge. He pointed to an icon that darted into a drift and then back out.
Some idiot rock jumper is trying to collect weaponry with the personnel pod. Well, at least he's got some sense, but...
Esteban, put a lock on that pod. Can you do a retro analysis? Could that have come from the ore hauler 4 or 5 hours ago?
It only turned its beacon on a few minutes ago, but let's see if I can get any kind of trace on the recordings. Yes, it could have. Why?
Because it's Brunn.
Only Brunn could be that lucky, although her luck could run out any moment.
You're going to have to guide Sweet Delight to it for a pickup. Pharaoh, are you getting this?
Yes. It's pretty thick stuff to take the yacht in.
You're right. What we need is in the incoming formations, if we can help her stay alive that long. I need a tight beam to the Harrier.
Brunn had forgotten everything but the scans that told her where the rocks were thickest. She had once thought it must be fun to pilot a pod like this, in the rings of a gas giant. Now she understood the look she'd gotten when she said so to the miners. And although she'd read that rocks usually drifted along together, all moving about the same vector and velocity, these rocks didn't act that way at all. She was constantly having to dodge rocks coming in at different angles, different speeds. She was almost glad she hadn't found any clothes, since she was dripping with sweat.
Brunn? Brunn, can you hear us? Brunn?
Communications. Now, where's that switch?
She groped around until she found it, and another little screen lit up to say that her transmitter had full power.
I hear you, but I'm busy.
Brunn, is that you?
Yes, it's Brunn. There's a lot of rocks out here. Who is this?
Kutsudis. Brunn, you need to let me give you some guidance. Someone's going to pick you up.
Why can't you just give me a vector over to Sweet Delight?
Won't work, and I doubt you've got the fuel for it.
Brunn glanced at the fuel display and was shocked at how much she'd already used. She'd been trying to do short adjustments.
Give me a 10-second burp starboard. Now port.
Something slid by in the scan, long and narrow, with a thermally active tip.
I don't understand all these thermally active rocks. I thought volcanoes had to be on planets.
They aren't rocks.
But they're not ships.
No, they're weapons.
You mean someone was shooting at me? Why?
No, you were crossing drifts of missiles. Missiles that didn't hit their targets. You're almost out of it now.
Brunn realized she was shaking. It was stupid. She was almost out of it now.
Is there a suit aboard? You've got 10 minutes before your next drift. If you can find a suit...
She found an EVA suit, a drab utilitarian model, nothing like her custom suit. Its owner had been shorter.
Oh, dear.
Brunn felt the pressure all along her spinal column once she'd struggled into it. But the locks did fasten, and the internal gauges did turn green. It was fully charged with air, water, and power. Best of all, the suit boots had gripper feet. She now had a solid down. She worked her way back to the control panel and discovered that it was just possible to handle the switches in gloves. She plugged in the suit comm to the pod's comm.
I'm suited now.
Just in case. Now what's your fuel situation?
Down to 10%.
And she didn't know what 10% was in terms of use. She didn't even know how long she'd been using it.
Then give me 1/2 second, thrusters 7 and 4.
I can see the fuel gauge dropping.
Not much longer.
When the blow came, it took her by surprise and slammed her against the adjacent lockers. The suit's padding protected her, but the boots came unstuck from the deck and she tumbled. Another blow to the pod sent her tumbling in another direction. Finally, it was still. Brunn put out a cautious foot, and it stuck. She could hear nothing. The end of the communication cable waved around, making it clear that she'd come unplugged.
Brunn.
She moved slowly back
Brunn.
To the control panel and plugged it in.
Brunn?
I'm here. I'm just shaken up.
Good. You're now locked onto the RSS Minesweeper Bulldog en route to the Harrier. Remain in your spacesuit. Do not attempt to leave your vessel until docking is complete and you have received notification.
And that was the end of that. Her comlink cut off and would not reopen. It seemed like a long time later that a gentler series of bumps woke her from a nap.
Brun?
Yes, I'm here.
Your pod is aboard our ship. It's the RSS Julian Child.
I thought I was going to something called Harrier.
Oh, you are. But Harrier has no facilities for docking like this, and the Admiral thought it would be safer to transport you by shuttle, not make you swim tubes.
Oh, thanks. Admiral? What Admiral? Where's Harris? Oh, for that matter, where's Lady Cecilia?
We understand you're in a vacuum-capable suit. If you'll open your hatch, it's the left-hand flat button.
That says exterior hatch. Caution. Yes, I know.
That will put you in our number 6 docking bay. It's not aired up. If you have any concerns about your suit air, please tell me now. There's an airlock to ship normal air about 6 meters to your left as you exit, and suited personnel will be there to help you.
Outside the pod, Brun saw a vast cargo bay open to space. Craft she had no name for were parked along the sides, and her pod filled the open middle. Beyond the lip of the bay, she could see the hull of another ship, a shape so odd she wasn't at first sure it was a ship. She stared until someone touched her suited arm, took the dangling cable of her comm unit, and plugged it into his own suit.
It's a minesweeper. Odd beast, isn't it? And nothing else could go in after you.
Then they guided her to the airlock and on into the ship, where she had a chance to change into a gray fleet ship suit before her shuttle flight left for the Harrier. The Admiral looked familiar, though Brun didn't think she'd met Admirals before. Not this one, anyway.
Some party.
I don't remember most of it.
My niece tells me you once wanted to run away and join the service.
Brun looked at the Admiral again. Graying hair, but the same evenly chiseled dark features, the same compact body, the same confidence.
You're Harris's aunt.
Yes. And you're Lord Thornbuckle's daughter. Tell me, are you cured of your desire for adventure?
Brun thought a moment, even though she didn't need to think.
Not really. I mean, I'm still alive.
The Admiral nodded as if she'd expected that answer.
Do you understand why my niece and her crew insisted that you learn all those boring bits you complained about?
I always understood. I didn't realize the complaining bothered them. Doesn't everyone gripe?
Admiral Serrano, she supposed they had the same surname as well as the same genes, tipped her head as if to inspect Brun more closely.
You are a remarkable young woman. My niece thought so, and you just proved it again. Will you eat with me?
Brun had no idea what meal might show up, but her stomach was ready for any of them. Any two or three of them.
Thank you. I'd be honored.